Recording is in progress.
Progress, that's what we need.
So what do you think of our new digs?
You know, people are going to start to wonder where our meager funds are going to be channeled to if they look at this.
Look at the painting we've invested in on the wall there. And this is pretty fancy background for us, you know.
It is. If our regular office looked like this, we would be considered well to do.
That's right. But you know, we're going to do it for our Christmas edition. We'll probably have a fireplace with the real fake logs, with a real fake fire.
Oh, well, we'll certainly have to give that a try.
With a digital crackling of the logs.
Only to disguise in case anybody is really listening in.
Exactly. This will really confuse the folks.
Mm-hmm.
Say, this is not the channel we usually. Usually there's dark and dreary background there, but this is just so cheery.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is going to be one of those days where we went through the list of things that are happening, and guess what?
Well, the usual suspects are still the usual suspects.
Exactly. And the news in a dreary day like today is just as dreary as it can be. For example, from our home and native land, apparently 1 in 30 people die from assisted suicide. Isn't that a lovely statistic? This has just been released, you know, this May thing, yeah, the legislation they passed that you can have assisted suicide, right? And they're going to extend the reasons for you being able to jump from the mortal coil here with the assistance of your lawyer and a doctor.
Well, certainly have a lawyer on your side is probably reason enough to make that big jump.
I don't know why all these people are breaking into Canada, wanting to come here in such large numbers, where the people who are already here in big hurry to leave and go off to some other paradigm. I know I'm making light of this, but that's really an awful statistic. 1 in 30 people take advantage of assisted suicide in Canada.
And having known several people that have chosen that route, who are in great pain, I don't fundamentally have a problem with it, but no. It is a staggering number, that's for sure.
But it just seems to be an awfully large number for... I mean, are you saying 1 in 30 people in Canada are that miserable that they just, apart from the people that you just spoke of, but they're that miserable that they have to resort to?
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, we all go, right? This is cool. Personally, I'm not in a big hurry to find out what's on the other side.
No.
I, you know, they're talking about making it even easier than it was before, like legislation, new regulation.
Well, yeah. I don't know what the answer is or isn't. And you're right. I'm not in any great hurry to find out what the next existence will be. And I feel the pain of the ones that are certainly the ones that are very, very ill. But yeah, it's another one of those situations where you've got a bunch of people trying to pass laws who probably, one, don't understand them to start with, and two, it may not have had any effect on them, or they haven't had any experience with it. So yeah, I don't know. It's
very sad, actually, you know, that's where we've evolved to. The other Canadian story that I think is worth chatting about while we're in this neck of the woods is the gun buyback program that the folks in Ottawa are promoting, because for some reason They believe that illegal guns entering the country will be immediately turned in by criminal elements for money to the police or to the government. And while that is a lovely, I would say, woke idea, for lack of a better term here, maybe the money should be better spent dealing with how to stop the guns from coming in the country in the first place. Because that's really the issue here, not that some guy who's hunting deer, is going to have his 303 confiscated because, these anti-gun zealots, just don't grasp or just don't want to grasp the fact that the criminals are never going to be involved in this program, period. And don't talk to me about, the country being overrun by AR-15s, because it's not even true. There's this, Canada doesn't even have that issue.
Well, if they can prove to me on a statistical basis that all the gun crimes that are going on in the country are done with registered weapons by people who have FACs and have taken the courses, I might buy into it. But I'd have to smoke some of that funny tobacco to even get on that plane of thought, I think.
It just boggles the mind that the thinking is so juvenile on this, because it really is childish.
Well,
It's not policy that's driven by any legitimate study of the cause and effect. That's really what it comes down to.
like so much of what's transpired in the last 6 years here, it's all been fairly childish, and it's been driven by knee-jerk reaction or wokeism or whatever you want to assign, what title you want to assign to it. So I don't know. And buyback. So how do they know what the thing is worth, right? If I paid $600 for a handgun, do I get $600 back, or do I get more because it's accrued in interest? I don't.
It really
It
is.
seems to me, with reference to our American neighbors, wasn't one of the reasons they put the right to bear arms in was to prevent the federal government from becoming oppressive, and that the citizens could always stand up for their rights. I don't think we want to have that in our Constitution. I could be wrong, but it's a strange. Again, I'm a mom and apple pie motherhood kind of statement. You either agree with the government or you don't. And if you don't, watch out, your bank account could be frozen.
Well, there's a related poll that's been done by none other than CTV that when it comes to believing in the efficacy of the government, particularly when it comes to the debacle that took place in February in Canada, they took a poll on November 25th that asked people if they thought the Emergency Act was legitimate to do. And they had 22,861 people vote on the poll. Now it's obviously an internet poll, so the error rate might be higher than on more sophisticated polls. But 78% of people said no, 22% said yes. And so you wonder what did the 22% believe the necessity to shut down the country for people honking horns on Wellington Street was all about.
Well,
I'm being a little facetious here, of course, but seriously.
I guess, how do you put this nicely? And there isn't a way. I'm sorry, there just isn't a way. What has transpired with those 22% is, in my opinion, what transpired between about 1930 and about 1936 in Germany, where people just turned a blind eye and everything was going along fine and it didn't affect me, so it's okay. And then look what happened. You know, are we headed for that? Time to take some blinders off here, folks, and start looking for the real root of the problems.
Well, there are a lot of reasons for people to be disenchanted. And if leadership of any country doesn't listen to the voice of the people, particularly if you take this statistic, 78 to 22, that's significant. You run the risk of serious civil strife down the road. And, you know, we're in a perfect storm at the moment, in many ways, for that to happen. And, well, look what's happening in China. You know, they've had enough of the COVID stuff, lockdowns, mandates, and the impact globally of China shutting down is not to be trifled with as a.
Yeah.
You have this never ending conflict in Ukraine, which is fed at one end with money and art and weapons, and continued at the other end with resources and determination, military industrial complex of the Russians. So it's, you know, the only people who are losing are Ukrainians and Russians who happen to live in that part of what's known as Ukraine. Then you have the fallout from that, as well as the nonsense of trying to defossilize the world at breakneck speed without having any thought whatsoever to the alternative. I watched a program on the History Channel the other day where they were saying, relatively new program, where they were trying to figure out how you can run steel plants that require great temperatures to melt steel and to forge things. And there certainly is no capability in our current arsenal of renewables to run a steel plant. Okay, you cannot drop forge stuff using a renewable resource that may or may not work, or if it's nighttime it doesn't work because solar pan. Anyhow, the point was that the point that I'm making is that we're rushing headlong into basically a social fabric destroyer, which is people getting poorer by the day and the price of stuff going up incrementally, and no one really caring.
Yeah. But, you know, you far better minds than ours. And, you know, in my case in particular, that wouldn't be too far a stretch, or supposedly looking after this stuff. But I can't help but wonder where the money is going, where's the money coming from, and who's benefiting the most. And I know it's not me.
Well, it's pretty clear that there's the haves and the have-nots in this entire perfect storm, whether it's the war in Ukraine, or whether it's the economy going south, or whether it's the nonsense with the, you know, the climate change hysteria. The 1% is doing just fine, thank you very much. Nobody is freezing in the dark who are proponents of this stuff. This is the interesting part, okay? The deindustrialization of the Western world as a consequence is not going to impact the multimillionaires living in their mansions, or the big corporate CEO cadre who seems to have aligned themselves with an ideology that doesn't impact on them, but impacts on the vast majority of ordinary folks. And well, it's a bit of a stretch just to link or circle back to what we were talking at the beginning about 1 in 30 Canadians is quite happy to do away with himself because he's that despondent or sick or what have you. It makes you wonder what the result will be as more and more people find themselves at wit's end, you know, and if you permit them to do away with themselves if it doesn't work out, that's really a pretty sick society. In the meantime, you know, I have to laugh. I also read on the weekend that there are huge losses in the cannabis industry because all this malarkey that went on years ago, but we have to legalize marijuana because it's going to, you know, solve the drug problem, which it didn't. And there's big money in it, apparently not. Because the biggest problem is, according to this report I read, was that the reason they can't make money is too many people are into it. That is getting it from the guy who does it illegally, not going to the cannabis store to buy their dope. You know, there never was that huge number of people that were going to be consumers of the stuff. So what a lot of malarkey was sold down to the folks. And who made money? The people who were the proponents of this, they made money, but I mean,
Well, again, like a Ponzi scheme, they got in early, made their money, and dumped it off onto a bunch of other people who are not making money.
yeah. Which leads me to, what'd you think of the guy who lost those billions in crypto? And he's going, well, easy come, easy go.
You know, I sit back and think that I think I got a cryptocurrency here. I'm not 100% sure. I think, no, maybe, no. Maybe. I don't understand why people would want to put their money into that when there's nothing to support it, nothing to back it up, nothing to.
No one, I never understood it. I mean, it never made any sense to me whatsoever what the crypto business was about. I mean, I remember you, when it first started out, and they were saying, okay, you have to learn how to mine cryptocurrency by solving mathematical problems and then sending the results into some, you know, into the ether essentially. And suddenly your crypto account would be credited for the work you did mining stuff, you know, and it really is sounds like a Ponzi scheme. And when you look at it, it's probably as much as a Ponzi scheme and unreliable as the fiat currencies we use today, which is based on nothing except the faith in the value of the currency that you're taking from a person to pay for a service or goods. And since the COVID thing, they printed so much money, we now know the currency's been debased. You know, it's worthless in relative terms. So
Well, I guess the only person that really made money on crypto, when the first cryptocurrency was when it was one crypto dollar to one US dollar. And, you know, that goes back a long time now. But, you know, even if it went from one cryptocurrency to two US dollars, you doubled your money, you should probably jump out at that point. But then what 1600 or I can't remember how high it got. One crypto bit to however many US dollars. And why people didn't see the writing on the wall then, you know, you should have dumped and got out along
well,
that.
avariciousness, greed, all those things come into play. I mean, you know, there's a saying that goes, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Right? So, and then, of course, you know, staying on our pessimistic broadcast today, because really no good news, it seems, anywhere. You know, we're looking at our friends over at the Border Hawk News, and my goodness, the number of folks entering the US, that just blows me away.
Where did it go? I saw that one, and it astounded me that, and I must admit, I'm totally ignorant about the collapse of Title 42, whatever that means. But could you imagine 18,000 apprehensions daily if this ends?
No, I mean
I never
that's
was
a
good at
total,
math. I'm
well, yeah, but
sorry.
that's a total collapse look, there's a saying, as you know, in our business, a country without borders isn't a country. Okay, so if this is what the United States doesn't want to be, a country, just a place, then they're, and that's essentially what they're suggesting here, by having no Title 42. I mean, okay, so there's no border. Ergo is not much of a country. It's a place.
Well, I guess that is that it's no border on the south or no border on the north or no border anywhere. I don't.
Well, look, this is the experiment gone pandemic. Okay, the no borders is a pandemic of ideas, of a world that has no relationship to the one previous. Okay, like the World Economic Forum, one of the things is no borders are necessary. It's clear. Okay, the European Union is a country, is a 28 countries with no borders. All right. Now, a country with no borders means that you have to keep all the interests of a very diverse group
Balance.
down some common corridor, and it's clearly not working. And the first real test of the European Union has turned out to be the Russian incursion into Ukraine, and they don't know what to do. They're putting themselves out of business, thinking that's how they're going to solve a problem. It just, and I've never understood how the European Union as a concept, it can continue to function as a 27 sovereign states, because the to me, if they were a United States of Europe, which they're not, then you don't then they wouldn't be having the votes in the UN of 27 countries. Then there'd only be one. The United States doesn't have 50 votes in the UN.
No.
But I mean, this bo no borders place that. I mean, the way the European Parliament acts and the way the European Commission acts, they're a country representing the interests of the 27. And when it comes to this real test, where you have two belligerents essentially, and they decide to take sides on this, but by doing so, they're prepared to turn their own community into a wasteland to prove a point. And you go, okay, there's not this doesn't none of this makes any sense. Okay. And I know this kind of a mixed up thing that we're kind of all over the map here for a second, but I don't understand. I thought I understood, but now I'm lost on this issue.
Well, I think when I was away on my holiday, I think I sent you a note about a book, which I think explains a lot of that. Michael Crichton's State of Fear.
Oh, yes.
And what I found interesting, it's a fictional story, but quite surprisingly, in this whole story, it's all footnoted. So whenever he makes a comment about global warming or this or that, there's a series of footnotes to the whole book where you can go and read the documents that he's looked at to research and write his story. But about two-thirds of the way through, of course, comes this divergent character, much like Doc on Back to the Future. You could see him with his big hair and crazy Marty Feldman eyes. And he said, you really got to th sit back and think that ever since the end of World War II, we have had successive governments rule us by fear. Fear of communism, fear of a red takeover, fear of this, fear of that. Well, when the Soviet Empire collapsed, what was the next thing, right? We don't fear the communists anymore. We don't fear a Russian takeover. And it was around that time that all of a sudden the climate became the fear. Oh, we're going to have burning oceans. We're going to have frozen wastelands. They couldn't really at that point decide what it was. But I sat reading this book going like, that's true. We really haven't had an era yet where we haven't had a fear of something. We're going to run out of fossil fuel. No, we're not. We're going to run out of water. Well, so maybe that's what this is all about. Maybe they're really, we talked about it before, right? The things that we're not supposed to talk about, or maybe we shouldn't mention. And maybe this is another one of those things. Maybe there really isn't a fear of anything. Maybe it's just the governments are trying to keep us so preoccupied with this stuff that we don't really look at what the issues are or aren't.
Well, yeah, I think the, no, I don't think, I'm very certain now that part of the problem with our perception of the future is based on the negativism that governments have been promoting now for a good long time. They really are not a positive force. I don't hear anything positive come out of any Western government, nothing optimistic. They promise you stuff which they clearly are unable to deliver. Particularly the last couple of years, I don't care. You pick the country and I'll show you the liar. It seems that they, and it doesn't matter what political party they're, they can be left, they can be right. They all seem to have the same MO. They lie. And they have carved out a niche for themselves. And now it's all about preservation of the status quo for themselves. I mean, you just have to look at some of the shenanigans that have gone on just within the G7, never mind the G20. And they took a fairly well-functioning post-World War II kind of system and started tinkering with it about 10 years ago. Perhaps a little, well, really after the meltdown of 2008 is when they started messing with the system, and they have totally screwed it up. Mm-hmm. They've talked about rules-based systems. Well, whose rules? Well, the ones they dream up, which, by the way, nobody in the southern part of the hemisphere, southern hemispheres, don't care about. Frankly, in Africa, South America, Asia, a lot of the concerns of the G7 are of no concern to those people.
Yeah.
Okay. And so there's that, as well as the greed that that accompanies it, and that's, I guess that's really the issue of our times, is that we don't have real leadership that we can look up to and say, okay, give us some positive, optimistic stuff, because we don't have it.
That's true. Yeah.
But that's how we started off today's discussion. It's one of those down discussion days.
Well, I guess it is, because it goes back to, again, previous discussions, the HBO series, The Newsroom, which started off with, every news cycle is there for at least 72 hours. We've got to keep it alive for 72 hours. And over the last 2.5 years, we've gone well past those 72 hours. And, is it now we have to keep this up for 72 months or 72 years or 72 decades? Or and as you mentioned, 1 in 30 people just in Canada have had enough, and they're taking some kind of action. It can only get better.
Right? Well, I'll tell you what we'll do is, next week's show, we'll work this week on finding good news to talk about.
Positives.
Why don't we talk about positive stuff on our next show? Because this is depressing.
course, it doesn't help that it's, you know, only 4 o'clock and it's dark outside.
That's right, John. Those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, exactly. Well, I don't know. The positive thing is that we're all healthy. We'll get through this, I'm sure. It's a tough row, tough hoe to row or row to hoe in the future. You know, but.
And you know, as a race of individuals, we are fairly resilient and manage to find ways around things, and you know, it always seems to come back.
Well, I think we'll have to work on having a positive broadcast for next week, and talk about where we're going to do with our forum next year. Let's just see if we can get the community to get involved.
Yes. I don't know how I haven't seen too much on the emails to come back and say whether we're doing right things or wrong things.
Well, we're getting people watching, so that's good. Now if they could step forward a little more enthusiastically, perhaps you know, we might have them on the show.
We certainly will make room.
Yes, that couch back there, there's room back there. Back there.
Yeah. Back there. Yeah. Way,
There, yeah.
way,
Way back there. All right, Bob. Look, you have a great week.
Yeah, you too. And it might be a challenge, but we'll certainly look for some positive stuff to note
Absolutely.
about.
All right. Well, take care.
You too.